All right, folks, so you've heard me talk about Hillsdale College giving away free copies of the Constitution and Declaration of Independence to my listeners for Constitution Day on September 17th. They've set an immediate goal to give copies to 1 million Americans who don't have one. And if not you, then maybe a young person that you know. And the response has been tremendous. However, this free offer for my listeners ends soon. So if you haven't already, order your free copy right now at dana4hillsdale.com. Because every American should have a copy of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. And these days, when most schools neglect to teach our kids about our nation's great heritage of liberty, it's more critical than ever to make sure that these documents are readily available to them. So to claim your free copy, visit dana4hillsdale.com today, complete a very simple form, and receive your booklet through the mail, and you don't even have to pay for shipping. But as I mentioned, this offer expires soon. So order your copy now at dana4hillsdale.com. That's dana4hillsdale.com. Don't delay.
Today, and at our request, the United States and Israel have agreed to develop a plan that will enable humanitarian aid from donor nations and multilateral organizations to reach civilians in Gaza, and them alone, including the possibility of creating areas to help keep civilians out of harm's way. It is critical that aid begin flowing into Gaza as soon as possible. We share Israel's concern that Hamas may seize or destroy aid entering Gaza, or otherwise preventing it from reaching the people who need it. If Hamas in any way blocks humanitarian assistance from reaching civilians, including by seizing the aid itself, we'll be the first to condemn it, and we will work to prevent it from happening again. We welcome the government of Israel's commitment to work on this plan. The president very much looks forward to discussing it further when he's here on Wednesday.
Is it just me, or does it seem like everybody's getting war drums going against Iran? Is it just me? I mean, I was listening to the senators talk a little bit ago. You had, who all drove? You had Marsha Blackburn, you had a number of them. And I don't dislike Marsha Blackburn, don't get me wrong. But it just seemed to me that a lot of people were really beating some war drums and really trying to lay the groundwork for some kind of argument about how maybe we should, you know, threaten or target Iran. And it, you know, it seems like it's a little bit more than just deterrence. Does that make sense? So that's one of the things we got to have a discussion about today. In addition to all of the House stuff, you guys know I really don't care, right? You guys know I don't care about the House Speaker race because it doesn't matter. You know this, right? I mean, I get it that I think it matters to the people for whom it is their only bout, if that makes any kind of sense. I think, you know, Jim Jordan's good. I don't think that my only objection to Jim Jordan is, can he raise money to win seats? Because you have to be able to raise money to win seats. And who's going to do House oversight? Or no, sorry, House Judiciary. Because that's the bulldog position. That's why you got all the stuff about the Bidens. It's because of Jim Jordan. You know this, right? Are you going to have somebody who is as aggressive as he is taking that spot? So that's kind of what I have some concerns about. Otherwise, I mean, he's super conservative. Democrats hate him, you know. And if he gets in there, it'll be because of people like Thomas Massie and Chip Roy and nobody else. All right, so we'll get it. We'll follow that later. I just don't care. Because I'm just more concerned about some of the footing that I'm hearing from, like I said, some of these lawmakers that I keep hearing it over and over again. I keep hearing the war drums. And I noticed yesterday, this was in your prep, if you get your, which you should, the newsletter over at Chapter and Verse, I had a lot of this in there as well, because it's just interesting to me how yesterday Biden canceled his whole damn day. Did you guys see this? Let's see, I'm pulling up he had everything after 9:15 was canceled. It was just weird. Wasn't it weird? Everything after 9:15 yesterday was canceled. And then he was going to go to Pueblo, not going to Pueblo now. A lot of people are very concerned about his ability to sound strong and lead on something like this. And then, of course, there's the Jordanian. In addition to Biden, you have, I'm not going to play this audio because you can't understand it, but you have the headline. The Jordanian king, he, right as you have Republicans trying to make the case to Biden about let's not have refugees here, You also had the Jordanian king going out there and saying, no, we're not going to take refugees here either. Or in Egypt, by the way. I had tweeted that last night. I saw that first pop up last night. No, you're not going to have this either. That's not going to happen. And we talked a little bit about that yesterday, because every single time that you have refugees that come from Gaza or come from one of the two territories that are there, whether it's West Bank or whether it's the Gaza Strip, historically, when they've been in Lebanon, when they have gone to Kuwait, when they've gone to Egypt, they literally, because the people who are in, you have to understand, the government that's in Gaza is an offshoot of Muslim Brotherhood. The Muslim Brotherhood, until Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State during the Obama-Biden administration, for a short duration, the Muslim Brotherhood wasn't banned in Egypt. They'd been banned in Egypt. Muslim Brotherhood was banned in Egypt. They'd been viewed suspiciously terroristy by our own government. And then when Hillary Clinton was Secretary of State, and this is when you saw the Arab uprising, she literally endorsed the Muslim Brotherhood candidate in Egyptian elections. The Obama-Biden administration sowed so much discord, I think second only to the Carter administration, perhaps, in recent modern times. And so she upset the apple cart. I mean, you know, you had the Clintons and Obama Biden trying to nation build in Libya, trying to nation build in Egypt by backing the Muslim Brotherhood. They had been ostracized. They were on the fringes. They were no longer welcome in their elections. And then here you have Hillary Clinton going in there and doing just that. So you have to understand, Hamas, and really ultimately, and I don't like using this word because it has no roots in thousands of years of antiquity, the quote unquote Palestinian Authority, because you have a ruling body over there, of which essentially Hamas and Fatah are, you know, just different sides of the same coin. And all of this is offshoot of Muslim Brotherhood. Hamas is offshoot of Muslim Brotherhood. That's why Egypt doesn't want them. Whenever you have these refugees that come in from these territories, all hell has broken loose. That's why they don't want them. So why is it that the accusations of being cold-hearted or bigoted, etc., never seem to apply to any of the other Arab nations that have literally gone on record and refusing to accept any sort of refugees at all whatsoever from these territories? The United States has absolutely zero flipping obligation to accept any refugee. And furthermore, we have more good reasons not to accept any of these displaced Gazans. We have even more reasons. First off, that's not our backyard. That's number one. Number two, you police your own over there. Arab League, you handle your own backyard. And then number three, no, because we don't have to. That's it. That's all you should have to say. So as all this is happening, you have Jordan's king saying, no, we are not going to do this. I thought it was funny that anyone in the U.S. was asking Egypt to take anybody in, I mean, have you seen the checkpoint have you seen the border between Egypt and Gaza? It's closed, y'all. Not only is it closed, but Egypt has their military out there all kitted out with full auto, making sure it stays closed. They ain't having it. And in the meantime, in Lebanon, you got the border being evacuated. So here's the other aspect of it. You have 28 different communities that are about roughly a mile or two right there by Lebanon's border. So for all the kids coming up, this is going to be fun geography for everybody, fun history for everybody. So they have these areas that are being evacuated. There's this fear somehow, and you might have seen this go back and forth, and I haven't talked a whole heck of a lot about anything emerging from Lebanon because I think that you're being baited. I feel like there's an op. I don't want to sound like a crackpot, but yeah, it's just weird. Cain's, you're dying. Why?
Nothing. Where's that Faraday hat?
I got it on my desk. I actually should.
We need to bring it in.
You know what I did? You're going to sidebar. So we have this Faraday thing that we're testing. The pocket that you put your phone in. Cain tried calling my phone. It doesn't work.
Right.
I'm not lying to you. I kept my phone in that damn thing for like 4 hours after radio yesterday because I just didn't want to talk to people. I kept it in there, and I think I'm going to keep it in there forever. I love not being accessible. Yeah. And people asking me stupid stuff. I love it.
It's a modern day tinfoil hat.
It is. Except it's a beanie. So it's, if you wear it all the time, no one's questioning you. But then they also have the thing for the phone. So we're testing it. We'll report our results back. But I'm just saying, it just is, it's just odd to me, the way that this is all playing, all kind of unfolding. And in the very beginning, there was discussion that no, there's not going to be any, you're not going to see any rockets, you know, anything like that coming in from Lebanon. We're not going to have that. You're not going to, you know, Hezbollah is not doing anything. Oh, well, maybe there's a few rockets coming in. Oh, now there's like this huge case to make for war. And the insistence that, I think that's also why you have to be careful in saying that, well, Iran planned all of this. We know this for a fact. I mean, I'm pretty damn sure that they did. I mean, it's Iran. I mean, historically, they've planned all of this. I mean, most of our soldier injuries, especially coming from being in this theater in the past, like, you know, 20 years, have been from, you know, Iran, whether it's Houthi, whether it's mines, etc. So there's a case to be made here. But I think that there is also, for people like me who are very, very skeptical, I do think that there seems to be this, all of a sudden, this push, the increase in force in this push to lead us to some sort of war, to some sort of face-off with Iran. I wanted to say, too, this brings me back to what Janet Yellen had said yesterday. And Yellen had said, well, the comment, anyway, that surfaced yesterday and was making the rounds. And Janet Yellen had said that the U.S., we can afford two wars. We can afford two wars. And I thought about that. You know, we talked about it a little bit yesterday, but I was thinking about it, too. I'm a huge World War II buff, major World War II buff, because we had family all over the world serving. You know, we had multiple fronts in World War II, whether it was in, you know, North Africa, whether it was in Italy, whether it was, you know, the Eastern Front, whether you were in the Pacific. I mean, there were multiple fronts in World War II. And I was thinking about all of this with regard to her remarks. She was saying that America can afford two wars, another war. We can't, though. We actually can't. We can't afford two wars for a lot of reasons, and the biggest of which is we've absolutely inhibited our own ability to be self-sustaining when it comes to manufacturing, when it comes to production, when it comes to energy. And it was only at great cost and great sacrifice that we managed a multi-front World War II. Because of these things, we could not enter World War II and be a liability to our allies that had already been in the thick of it for some time. We had to go in and be an asset. We were able to do that because we had manufacturing capability, production capability, and because we had energy security. None of the people who are claiming that we can afford more war have explained exactly how. With no energy independence, no manufacturing independence, how we would swing a multi-front wars again. None of them. You know, after Pearl Harbor, thankfully, you know, it wasn't so much our carriers, it was other ships, because Coral Sea, that was, you know, that was a carrier battle. But after Pearl Harbor, do you realize it was a matter of months that we were able to have those ships fixed, refloated, if necessary, and put back out to sea? For Coral Sea, and then a month later, Midway. It actually shocked the Japanese how quickly the United States was able to get back on its feet. And I think by some dumb stroke of luck, you know, they hadn't gone and looked at any of these naval yards where we actually could repair our ships. Because if they had done that too, I mean, I don't know what that would have greatly impaired us, but they didn't do that. I think just because they didn't know in Pearl Harbor. But they were shocked at how quickly, you know, we had thousands of people. We were working around the clock to get those ships back out there. We wouldn't be able to do that again. You realize that, right? We need to discuss the realities of this. Because we haven't been fully prepared, and you can't pick fights unless you're fully prepared.
Black Rifle Coffee Company, together with the Boot Campaign, are on a mission to raise $1 million to change the lives of veterans. Now through the end of the year, when you grab a can of ready-to-drink coffee, you can help contribute to making this massive donation possible. The Boot Campaign is one of the most renowned veteran-focused nonprofits in the country, working tirelessly to provide life-changing aid and benefits to service members and their families. Black Rifle Ready-to-Drink Coffee is available in several great-tasting flavors at blackriflecoffee.com/Dana or at convenience stores nationwide. Whether it's the berry mocha, vanilla bomb, or espresso salted caramel, every can helps. Fuel your caffeine fix while making a huge difference in the lives of veterans and their families. Black Rifle Coffee Company is committed to serving the veteran community, and with your help, we can all continue to make a difference. Let's raise a can together and keep fueling Americans for a good cause. Visit blackriflecoffee.com/Dana. That's blackriflecoffee.com/Dana.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
I'm literally going to put my phone in that Faraday envelope so people stop texting. I'm like, hi, what, I can't answer right now. Let's see. A new residential cruise ship is going to let travel. This sounds like hell. This sounds like hell on earth. I'm sorry if this is your jam. A new residential cruise ship is going to let travelers live at sea while it sails around the world every 3.5 years. It'll charge you $100,000 for a quote-unquote condo. I mean, what? And you can travel on segments of the itinerary. It's the Villa V. The CEO says the company is going to close on a ship by the end of this year. So it's a residential cruise ship. It's that, but the condo started at $100,000. And so this is like, I guess, a thing that they're like, people are actually getting into. You just say, I don't know how I feel about this. Like, you're trapped on a vessel with people. Yeah. You can never leave. You can't go and touch grass. No. I'm a landlubber. Even though, don't appropriate the pirate costume for Halloween, because my culture is not your costume. I literally had family members that were hung off the Carolinas for piracy. That is a real thing. Last name was Sutton. That's a real thing. That happened. They married into the American Indian side. But that's a real thing. So, you know, but I'm a landlubber. I don't know. I couldn't do that. Could you do this? Could you do this?
I don't know. For every year? I don't know.
They have multi-day stops. They have a 12-day dry dock scheduled in Singapore. I'm going to come back to this because I feel like that, I don't know how, that just bothers me. How could you live like that? Home sales are on track for the slowest year ever since the housing bust, according to the Wall Street Journal, because everybody's broke. I also have this thing about food. What is it? Food inflation. I have a whole other headline about that. And also, the SEC head says financial crash caused by AI nearly unavoidable. A Georgia man was slapped with a $1.4 million speeding ticket after going 90 miles per hour in a 55 mile per hour zone. That's because it was a super speeder, and Georgia's stupid system like recorded it as such. They make you have to go into court to contest it, essentially. We have a lot more on the way. Speaking of AI, what about AI war? Stick with us. For 10 years, Patriot Mobile has been America's only Christian conservative wireless provider. And when I say only, trust me, they're the only one. Glenn and the team have been great supporters of the show, which is why I'm proud to partner with them. Patriot Mobile offers dependable nationwide coverage, giving you the ability to access all three major networks, which means you're getting the same coverage you've been accustomed to without funding the left. And when you switch to Patriot Mobile, you're sending the message that you support free speech and religious freedom, the sanctity of life, the Second Amendment, military veterans, and first responders. Their 100% U.S.-based customer service team makes switching easy. Keep your number, keep your phone, or upgrade. Their team will help you find the best plan for your needs. Just visit patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT and get free activation when you use offer code Dana. Join me and make the switch today. That's patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT.
Whether you're a policy wonk, a news junkie, or simply someone hungry for insightful discourse, the Dana Show podcast has your back. Follow Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What was your response when you heard what Governor DeSantis said?
You know, I dealt with this every day for 2 years. And, you know, what I can tell you is you have to realize that whether we're talking about Gazans and Palestinians, you know, all of them don't... you've got half of them at the time that I was there didn't want to be under Hamas's rule. They didn't want to have terrorists overseeing them. They knew that they were living a terrible life because of Hamas. You had the other half that supported Hamas and wanted to be a part of that. We see that with Iran, too. The Iranian people don't want to be under that Iranian regime. They don't. We saw what happened to Mahsa Amini. We saw how they treat them. There are so many of these people who want to be free from this terrorist rule. They want to be free from all of that. And America's always been sympathetic to the fact that you can separate civilians from terrorists. And that's what we have to do.
So that was Nikki Haley. This was a back and forth that has kind of blown up in the past couple of days, especially as the argument over, well, who is going to take in all of these displaced people in Gaza, which it should be Arab nations or nobody, has heated up. Welcome back to the program. Dana Loesch here with you. You can listen coast to coast. You can stream the radio program. You can watch the simulcast. And also later today, 3 p.m. Eastern, I believe. Yes, 3 p.m. Eastern. My exclusive sit-down with Florida First Lady Casey DeSantis. So you don't want to miss that. The back and forth on this began ultimately with, I guess it was Face the Nation, CBS, when they were asked separately about, well, what's going to happen to all these people that are in Gaza? And Ron DeSantis, we played that audio yesterday, was just saying, look, no, we're not bringing people in. That's just the way it is. It's not going to happen. We're not bringing people in. And I'm going to touch on this more because AOC is very clumsily tried to take issue with us. And he gave the reasons as to why you can't, you know, bring people in. Nikki Haley, she was asked about this with Jake Tapper. And I think it was a clumsy way of asking. I get aggravated with the way Jake Tapper does questions. Because some people, their interview style is they just fire off machine gun-like questions at you. Like, for instance, George Stephanopoulos is just pow, 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 pow. He just asks you questions. He doesn't do a segue. He doesn't do a setup. Some people are a little bit more casual and conversational. That's my kind of style. Some people just sort of sputter on and trip and say, and that's what Jake Tapper does. It's just weird. I mean, it took him, of the clip, 3/4 of it is him trying to ask this question. And then he didn't even articulate it, I think, in a focused enough manner, because it just was sloppy all around. He was playing off of the Face the Nation soundbite of DeSantis talking about these refugees, contrasting it with what Haley had said prior. And so you have the news media that was trying to pit them together against each other with this. Although I don't think, you know, they needed much help because they've disagreed with each other at debates prior. And so that's what Tapper was asking. I was a little bit incredulous at some of the folks on social media who were like, that's not even what, she wasn't even talking about this issue. I'm like, do you think that this conversation only exists in this 2-minute clip on Twitter? Because it doesn't. Because this is actually an extended version of a conversation that's been going on for 3 days now. So she was asked to expand on how she had contrasted previously with DeSantis. I don't think that they were taking pains to avoid a rhetorical confrontation, but her answer was weird. And I think part of it was, and I'm not a fan of her foreign policy. I'm not a fan of her entirely politically, but I'm giving a little bit of benefit of the doubt because the way that he asked that question was so goofy. And I got the sense that she didn't know exactly what she was supposed to be responding to first. And that wasn't because he was trying to be mischievous and try to get her in a gotcha. I just think he had an inarticulate way of asking this question. So she could have come out, and what she should have done, just to play it safe, is say, you know, we should not be taking anyone in. If, you know, the Jordanians aren't bringing anyone in, if the Qataris are not bringing anyone except Qatar has no problem apparently with taking in anybody, and so long as it's Hamas leadership. That's what her answer should have been. And instead, she was trying to triangulate, made popular by Dick Morris, who worked for Bill Clinton back during the 90s, trying to look like she's sympathetic to both sides while still rising above the fray. She was trying to triangulate on the issue very inarticulately, but it was also an inarticulately asked question. Yet it made her sound even softer than maybe she had anticipated sounding, if that makes sense. It made her seem as though she could not come to a position decisively on saying, no, we shouldn't be bringing anyone in, because she went into this long, well, you know, and there are people there who, you know, et cetera, which we're going to come back to, that, you know, they don't want to be under this either. You know, they don't want to be under this. So that opened, and this was smart of him to do this. I actually would have criticized DeSantis if he had not taken this hit. Audio soundbite two. This is, and it's fair for him to say this because that's how she did sound. Listen.
And the truth is, in Gaza, it's a dysfunctional, toxic society, in part because they teach young people to hate Jews. That is endemic to their culture. And, you know, we've been dealing with this issue. I remember in Congress, people tried to defund some of the money going to the textbooks, but it is really, really bad. And so you just have to understand that. And it doesn't mean that they're all members of Hamas, but what it does mean is that's not something you want to import into the United States. I'm willing to speak the truth. She's trying to be politically correct. She's trying to please the media and people on the left. I don't care about that. I'm going to speak the truth and let the chips fall where they may. I don't think that you're going to find a lot of polling suggesting that they believe Israel has a right to exist as a Jewish state. And I don't think you would find a lot of pro-Jewish sentiment amongst the population, because you'd be persona non grata there.
He is emphatically not wrong. So I would have, I would have criticized him had he not taken that response, because that, I mean, you're in a primary for the love. You got to hit, you know, hit somebody. That's what my husband would yell at football games when my kids were on the field. When my youngest played football, he'd be out there, hit somebody. It's Texas. Shut up. I don't want nobody covering their genitals and going hiding in the corner. Audio soundbite three. So Nikki Haley responds to this. They're dragging this out. So Nikki Haley responds to what DeSantis just responded to. This is her latest clip on this. Listen.
I've always said we shouldn't take any Gazan refugees in the U.S. I said it when I was at the U.N. that we shouldn't take Syrian refugees at the U.S. I believe that those in the region should take them. I said that about Syria then. That's why Jordan and Turkey took the bulk of the refugees there. And I think, honestly, the Hamas sympathizing countries should take these Gazans now. We're talking
Here's my question. Go ahead and cut this. Why did she not just come out and say that in the interview with Jake Tapper? Now you understand. Her people have had to spend 2 days now trying to reset this. They've had to spend 2 days trying to reset this. She's taken hits in the press. She's taken hits from other candidates. And it was smart for DeSantis to respond the way he did, because I don't care if you like her or not. I got friends who like her. She looked weak as hell with that answer to Tapper on Sunday, and you know she did. Actually, she looked weak on Face the Nation saying that. And then she looked weak when she was answering that with Tapper. She had two separate interviews in which she came off sounding weak. Now, you could say, and I was very generous, and the Tapper question was very inarticulate and clumsy, and it sounded like a college freshman asking a question. I get it. She maybe didn't know what she was responding to. Face the Nation wasn't like that, though. Her answer there should have been her answer Sunday. Her answer there should have been her answer Monday morning, but it wasn't. Why is it taking 2 days for them to get right on this? That's on her. You can't get mad at other people saying, whoa, 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 you sound weak here. When you sounded weak, you can't get mad at other people. Is she turning into Vivek? How dare you quote me accurately? Even with my tweets. How dare you? I mean, for the love, come on. That should have been her answer from the get-go. Now, if that's where she is, I'm glad that she's finally rested on that position that everybody else has kind of been on. I'm glad. That should have been her position. It's not difficult to say this. Now, I want to touch on the AOC thing, because the AOC comes out. Oh, she's mad. They did this interview with her. I think this was CNN. And I don't know if this is reflected in audio soundbite 7 or 8 that we have, but she was asked about DeSantis's remark about Gazan residents, about whether or not they are they hold anti-Semitic views. So she was on CNN Newsnight last night with Abby Phillip, I think, is the host of this show. She was on CNN Newsnight, and they played this clip for AOC, because I know that when we're talking about geopolitical issues, not the veteran who's been over there, but the bartender who hasn't, I definitely want their opinion. And she was asked about, you know, is there, there's, you know, what he said, there's a lot there. Should Arab countries be taking on the lion's share of the burden to absorb what could be a million, if not more, refugees from Gaza? And so what she said, AOC's response was that it was dangerous. She said what Governor DeSantis said when he said, quote, unquote, all Gazans are anti-Semitic. How incredibly destructive and dangerous that rhetoric is. We just had a 6-year-old boy, and she was talking about this Muslim 6-year-old that had been stabbed because of this nut job who was decided to carry out the holy war like that. I don't know. And I had made the point yesterday that you're not going to see people in the streets cheering this guy on and calling for more of that stuff. Like, he was condemned. And you also had a bunch of rabbis that showed up at this little boy's funeral too, by the way. But that was her remark. She said, oh, it was dangerous. There was not a damn thing that DeSantis said that was wrong. It is literally it's you want to talk about CRT and DEI on steroids. That is the education system in Gaza. He's not wrong when he says that the textbooks do not even show Israel being on the world map. That is correct. He is not incorrect when he talks about how children are raised and are instructed basically going by the Hamas charter. And if you have not read the Hamas charter, it reads like Mein Kampf Part 2. So all of that is correct. She's trying to say that it's dangerous to point out that this is what people in this area believe. Now, that is not the same as saying you believe that people should be killed or should be reckless casualties that no one tries to prevent. A, those are two completely different arguments. And B, it begs the question that that's what Israel's doing in the first place, which it's not, because Israel doesn't target civilians the way Hamas does. He is right. It is an uncomfortable truth and an uncomfortable reality. You can say that acknowledging that rhetoric is dangerous, but I dare say that even encapsulating that as part of the way you administer your territory is dangerous. That's more dangerous. In fact, that is the danger in raising kids to hate other people because they're Jewish, the danger in raising kids to not even acknowledge that a nation has the right to exist. That is the danger in making a Nazi point as part of your charter. That is the danger, Ms. Bartender. Not pointing it out.
Don't let FOMO get the best of you. Stay in the loop and ahead of the curve by following Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of the United States.
Frozen, the movie Frozen.
Yes.
It's huge, this movie, right? I've seen little girls all over the world with the backpacks. And, I mean, you can't watch that movie and not know that the ideal is white. Blue eyes, blonde hair, red hair. That's just one example. And you can have maybe a frog that turns into a princess for a minute and goes back to a frog and she's a brown girl. But that's the exception, not the rule. So don't be naive about what they're internalizing and how early.
I feel like I have shaken baby syndrome from listening to her. That is, what's her face? Robin D'Angelo, who is a bitchy old white lady who, that's her job, B-O-W-L, Wall. It's an actual role, apparently, in, you know, America. And I'm amazed. I mean, first off, she's the racist. Secondly, the movie Frozen is based on it's like a Nordic tale, you know, up in the Nordic areas, you know, the Swedens and the Norways and the Denmarks and the Greenlands. Lots of brown people up there, you know. I mean, it's where are the brown people? It's Cain's where you came from, right up there, you know. Yeah, all your Hispanic family came from up there, you know, in the Norways.
There's brown people up there?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
That's where they come from, apparently. I mean, according to Robin DiAngelo, who's, I mean, golly, I've never seen a woman hate herself so much as this broad. Is she going to get mad and, is she going to get mad and is she going to go after Moana next? I mean, what's the problem? Guess what? There are Polynesian tales. There are, like, Mulan. Is she going to get mad at Mulan? Is Robin DiAngelo going to bust up and go, where are all the white women at? Like, in Blazing Saddles? Or does she save that level of bitchery just for, you know, like, this movie in particular? I'm just curious. I mean, there's all kinds of amazing tales all over the place. Also, maybe you should get a little bit out of your Tupperware fresh, old, you know, white progressive commie lady viewing habits, because there's a lot of amazing tales coming out of India, Bollywood makes some of the, and Tollywood makes some of the best films. RRR is one of the best films I've seen literally in the past 5 years. Maybe you should, like, expand your viewing habits and stop bitching about children's animation. I'm just, you know, oh my gosh. Or maybe you should watch some anime, woman. Oh, yeah. I mean, for crying out loud, this is just stale and cliched, and it just shows how narrow-minded and small her lived experience is. Maybe go get a progesterone shot. I don't know, woman. We got a lie set it, and I mean it. We'll get a second hour coming up. Stick with us. It's a big rally. There's also another video of this. This was in Dallas on Sunday, where you can clearly hear the crowd chant from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. You hear them chant that over and over again. It's in downtown Dallas. One of those chicks has got like a squeaky. So it's a genocide chant. That's a chant of genocide. Welcome back to the show. It was in Dallas. Dana Lash here with you. You're cynical curmudgeon. Can listen coast to coast. You can stream the radio program, all that good stuff. And this is, I also made my sit down, my exclusive sit down with Florida First Lady Casey DeSantis that airs on the 1st. If you're watching the simulcast on the 1st, it airs right here at 3 p.m. Eastern. So Juan was making sure I got the time zone on that correct, because I keep wanting to default to Central. So we'll have that. You can watch that. That's today. And subscribers to Chapter and Verse, you will be able, if you miss the airing of that, you'll be able to have first access to the YouTube, to the full interview online after that. So, yeah, that was in downtown Dallas. Just over the weekend, you had all these people out there chanting for genocide from the, because let's think about just for a second, geography. I loved geography. Geography and history were two of my strongest subjects in school. Now, you have the Jordan River on one side, and you have the Mediterranean on the other. Just, Cain, just as a reminder to the listening and viewing audience, what, pray tell, lies between the Jordan River and the Mediterranean, sir?
That would be Israel, Dana.
That is correct, sir. Thank you, chef. That is correct. You don't watch The Bear, do you?
No.
You haven't. All the good stuff I give you to watch, and you don't do it. You don't do it. You haven't even played Warhammer, have you?
I have not.
This guy. You. This guy.
You're bad.
We're going to talk. We're going to talk after this. All right. So they were all chant. That's a chant of genocide. You're chanting for genocide. Where are they supposed to go? That's their land. Don't say, I mean, I will literally spend all day. I'll take up your whole life. I'll use up all your life force allocated for today to have this whole debate. Don't. That's their land. You're talking about just eradicating them entirely. So that's a chant of genocide. Tell me again how Ron DeSantis is wrong about anti-Semitism. Again, you have the Gazan area. They had elections in 2006. Granted, they haven't had any since then, but they have had a number of surveys, and people have been very, very pleased with the way that Hamas has run everything. You have a martyrs fund, for crying out loud. And so this whole, that we've been talking about the whole back and forth with the refugees, you had a bunch of Republican lawmakers that had a press conference a little earlier. I know Marsha Blackburn was the one who was leading that. Now they're having the House vote for Speaker, finally. It might be Jim Jordan. He might get to it. I'm just a little concerned as to who's going to be the bulldog in House Judiciary. But all of that happening. And in the meantime, we had another, I mentioned this, if you get my newsletter, I put this in my newsletter too. You had another group that joins the already two carrier strike groups in the Med. So now, and then there's this a possibility, I think, of like 2,500 Marines just on call with the 26th Marine Expeditionary Unit. Could be en route towards the Eastern Mediterranean from the Arabian Sea. They're going to link up with the USS Mesa Verde. The Mesa Verde was in mid-deployment repair period in Spain. They're already going across the Med. So you have two carrier strike groups. You got this. That's a lot of firepower. So it's a show of force as a deterrent, I'm thinking. Perhaps, you know, with particular, like, Iran, don't do anything. Just don't do anything. And that's if Iran does decide to, I guess, which I just can't see. That goes against the pattern of Iran. Iran has always done everything through proxy, whether it was through the Houthi, whether it's through Hezbollah, whether it's through Hamas. They've always done everything through proxy because they've never wanted to go toe-to-toe, head-to-head. So that would be a departure from how it's always previously been. And I have no reason to think that they want to depart from that now. I mean, I always follow evidence because I'm a science-based person. It's why I'm a conservative. But I'm very hesitant and suspicious of people who immediately want to just Leroy Jenkins you into some kind of conflict. With a lot of the lawmakers that were speaking, you know, a lot of the senators, I like a lot of them. Just immediately, you know, my eyes kind of, I start doing a Clint Eastwood squint when they start talking about some of this stuff. But this whole issue here. I read this headline. Let me show you this. I'm going to tie this together about energy. Europe and the power grid. It's power grid. Now, this is going to make sense at some point. So let's just start here. Roll with me because we're going to bring the tugboat in. Okay. They are seeing, we've seen this in the United States, especially in places like California and elsewhere, where you see that the more you rely on green energy like solar and wind, the less you're actually able to rely on it, if that makes sense. You're really not able to, you know, not the same. There's people say it's growing pains. I say that it's relying on an inefficient, insufficient, old-timey form of energy. I mean, you realize that it is old-timey. If you like green energy, I'm not judging you. I just think it's like steampunk. You're literally, it's steampunk. It is. It's old-timey energy. I rely on the wind. Oh, good for you. We have windmills. You know, they've been doing that forever. Good for you. You figured out how to go back in time with your energy reliance. Applause. I like fossil fuels. I love fossil fuels because they always replenish. People kind of forget that as well. But here's the problem. So you have, I have two separate headlines, and I think I had both of these in the newsletter that I sent out to subscribers over at Substack, Chapter and Verse. One was that nobody's buying EVs. That's number one. Number two is that Europe cannot keep up with the demand. They have a huge obstacle. They have aging power grids. They're trying to move away from some of this. They have rolling blackouts. The International Energy Agency in Europe is, they're warning that rolling blackouts are becoming a risk unless you basically use less. They're based in Paris. They said that, well, you know, your capacity to connect to and transmit electricity is not keeping pace with the rapid growth of clean energy tech. Is there complications? I feel like we got ahead of our skis as a humanity. We have made problems for ourselves that are problems of the rich people with no problems. Problems. How do we make energy more expensive? How can we literally put a stick in the spoke of our bicycle here, fall over and clutch a knee like the meme? How can we do that? Oh, let's go ahead before we're ready, before we have the capability, before we even have the independent sourcing power. Let's go ahead and just move everything to quote unquote green tech. I was going off a little bit about this online earlier today, because this is, it's true. The green movement is literally nothing more than a modern day indulgence system for progressivism religion. And all it does is it moves the pollution elsewhere, out of sight, out of mind. That's like how you had some, like, for instance, Robert Runsey down in Florida, the guy who is the superintendent of the Parkland School. He's the guy who claimed that he reduced the prison, the school to prison pipeline, because he literally just stopped reporting crimes. That's not me making that up. That was the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas Commission that discovered that. And he won awards under Obama Biden for reducing the school to prison pipeline, because, you know, you can reduce the number of crimes if you just don't report them. Oh, wow. It's amazing. So that's kind of the same progressive approach to this. They think, look, if we put the pollution over here, if we don't have it over here, we're green. Green is gold. That's how they look at it. That's how they look at it. But they think out of sight, out of mind. Let's just keep it in India. Let's keep it in China. Let's keep it in South America. But their true goal is to really, ultimately, is to kneecap national security, because you place monopoly power for this in the hands of geopolitical foes like China. Something, you know, again, look back at the Democratic Republic of Congo and Seneca, Rosemont Seneca, Biden's thing. They've benefited from this handsomely. This all goes into what we've been talking about for the past week. Are we this breakout of conflict in the Middle East? You do not have the same people, obviously, with the same mindset and the same ideology in positions of power like you did back during the time that the phrase "the greatest generation" was made. One of the reasons why it was the greatest generation is because they made difficult decisions. Sometimes the best, actually, I would say almost all of the time, the best decisions are not advantageous ones for people to make for themselves. It's a call to sacrifice, whether it's time, whether it's money, position, sometimes self. And there were a lot of people during that period that had enough moral fiber that they were able to make those decisions. We do not have those same people, definitely in positions of power today, not in positions of elected office. I go so far to say, you know, the leaders who navigated those times, even some of the Democrats, they are not from the same stuff as people today. Because when our grandparents were young, I feel like people from both sides of the aisle at least shared the desire for American victory and American exceptionalism. And we have people in elected office today who definitely do not want that. That was, you do you now understand the whole goal of CRT and DEI? It was to poison the desire for American exceptionalism. It was to poison the ambition to do great because you felt guilty about doing it. You should feel shame for wanting to be better, whether for yourself or for your own country. You should curb your ambition with the weapon of shame. That is DEI and CRT. It's a lot more insidious than it even looks on paper. It was to poison the desire for American exceptionalism. That was the goal. It was a psyop, and it was successful. I've been talking about this since 2012 when Derrick Bell, who was an Obama mentor, by the way, introduced this in academia back in the 60s. These were all the boomers, all the kids that came from the greatest generation. Hard men create good to, or strong men create good times create weak men. So this is, you know, I look at this, I go back to these problems that we've created for ourselves, whether it's, you know, green energy or whether it's all this other stuff. We literally made up problems and we made ourselves weaker as a result. Do you think the people right now who are making plans to subvert American power, do you think that they're concerned about the greenies in their country? We do not live in a world where we have the luxury of accommodating such privileged bitchery. I don't know how else to put it, but that's what it is. If that's where your heart is and you think that green issues are just the be-all end-all, well, bless your heart, they're not. We don't even have the capability to rely on it in good times. How the hell do you think it's going to work in bad times? And I don't know if you've seen what's kicking off. We got people who are wanting us to take us in bad times. You have the combination of War Inc. and terrorists. This is not good.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So, this is such a weird story. So, Britney Spears says that she, in this new tell-all book that's coming out, her memoir that's coming out this month, she says that she had an abortion and that when she was with Justin Timberlake, and that she was 19 years old. She says that he wasn't ready to be a father, claims the agonizing decision was made, and that she says, if it had been left up to me alone, I wouldn't have done it. He was sure he didn't want to be a father. She didn't know how she was going to take care of the baby. Yes, Britney Spears, a multimillionaire, didn't know how she was going to take care of her baby. Yeah, sounds kind of like a cop-out. Sorry, you can't. It's two of you in this. You can't just be blaming it all on him. People, this other trash news, that one chick, Maren Morris, who nobody knows what became of her, she decided to torpedo her career and her marriage. Now, no one likes to celebrate the end of a marriage, but when you're married to Maren Morris, it becomes a little bit more understandable. Also, did I say it? Yeah, I did. A couple of other things here. The Westfield police have issued a razor. They do this all the time. There's no razor blades in y'all's candy. Stop it. Westfield police issue a razor blade in the candy warning over an unproven claim. Look, you should always check your kids' candy anyway, right? You should check your kids' candy anyway. But they've been doing this whole razor blade in the candy since Kane and I were kids, so don't. A dog found a lump of whale vomit on the beach that could be worth thousands. Whale vomit. That's the nastiest thing I've ever seen in my life. I will say, though, it looks like an underbaked bread loaf. Just thousands of dollars. They say you can make it make perfume out of it. What? And that it's hard to come by substance. Ugh, stick with us.
Looking for the drive-through version of the Dana Show? Check out the best highlights from every show and Dana's Absurd Truth podcast, posted daily from the Dana Show.
Jordan. Auchincloss. Jeffries. Babin. Jordan. Bacon.
McCarthy. Dumbass.
Oh, that's so funny. So that's my friend Brian Kilmeade, who was caught on a hot mic saying that. Because who was it? The Bacon dude.
Don Bacon.
Don Bacon. What a name, man. Mr. and Mrs. Bacon's son. Right. Representative Bacon. I mean, you think that you know, it's a popular meet there. You'd think, you know, you'd be of the name. I don't know. So he put out McCarthy, and that was Brian Kilmeade, I guess he forgot he was on a hot mic. You got to assume every mic is hot. He knows that. It's funny, though. Welcome back to the show. Bottom of this second hour, Dana Lash here with you. So we're following this. So you got five other people, essentially, that put up. They had random people, eight that are not voting for Jim Jordan. So I don't know how many rounds this is going to go to. Remember, it went to 15 with McCarthy. So now it looks like this is going to go to round two with Jim Jordan. So we'll see. I haven't followed it totally. I mean, I followed it, but I haven't obsessed about it on air because more than enough of you have said, yeah, you're right. I really don't give a rat's ass about the speaker. I don't care. I'm broke. Inflation's crazy. Now war? What? That's where everybody else is concerned. And I will say there's more than a handful of you have expressed, and you guys are reliable, you know, constitutional voters. But there have been a significant number of you that have expressed, in some ways that I cannot share on air, your dissatisfaction with the way that the Republican Party has handled this whole thing. Because see, that's where we've all been at. It's not that we opposed removing McCarthy. I think we all just didn't like the way that it was done because you just don't go into a fight unprepared. You know what I mean? I mean, you're going to go in, you want to hit someone and then be like, and then this is what I got. It's like the Indiana Jones thing when he's like, which one was that where he's got to swap out these things very quickly.
Oh, yeah, Temple of Doom.
Yeah, in the Temple of Doom. You got to swap out the relic at the Temple of Doom. You can't be going up and just punch it off and then, oh, all hell breaks loose. You know, you got to have Got to do the swap, right? That's kind of where we're at. And so a lot of you, because you, it's not, and it's not like you disliked any of the people involved. You were just upset at A, the timing, and B, how it was done, because nobody seemed to have a plan. That's where I've been coming from this whole time. That's what made me mad. So y'all don't, you know, you're all just like, I don't want another rhino. I like Jim Jordan. I mean, he's been on the program, I don't know how many times. I mean, he's, you know, he's a good guy. I really like him as House Judiciary Chair because he is relentless. And that's where I've always been a little concerned. Who's going to take over that job if he's Speaker? Is it going to be somebody who is as relentless as he is? And that's, I think it's a fair question to ask, isn't it? That's a fair question. Are they going to be as relentless as he is? Because he it was like he was tailor-made for that job. Is he tailor-made for Speaker? My concern, and just because I get how this goes, when you're Speaker of the House, you kind of have to be prom queen. I know, it's just how it works. Because you not only have to shepherd all your little ducklings that are in your party, but you also have to sometimes get the Democrats to support something that you want out there. That's the nature of the game. You got to raise with a majority in the House. Does that fit into Jim Jordan's skill set? I mean, he's got to be going, now he's got to go to all the little dinners, all the little tea times. Not that those are bad things, because I love backyard raising money for, you know, causes. I get it. But he's got to do all of that. Is that in his skill set? Because we all know someone who just sucks at that. Have you ever met someone who, and you're like, you should not be in PR? Or you should not be, we all know somebody like that. My question is he the fighter that you're trying to take and put in more of that statesman role? That is my only concern. Not about his record or anything. I'm concerned about that function, and here's why. You could say, it's easy to say, well, Dana, you shouldn't care about that. Well, that person is the number one person responsible for raising money for these House races. Who do you think bails out these embattled Republicans in some of these swing districts? Who do you think bails them out for money for ad time? Get out the vote canvassing. Giving them just enough to get them across the threshold. It's the Speaker who raises money and has that pack. It's that person. That's why, because that's all part of it. That's part of that job. So that's why I'm saying he was tailor-made for judiciary. I just don't know who else would do it. I don't know who else would do it that would want to, A, and B, could get the necessary votes. I don't know. So it looks like we are going to go to a second round. Everything's frozen until then. Democrats are they're just cackling. They're laughing about all this. Just the oddest timing. I think this would have been better maybe to do right before Christmas, where everybody's distracted by the holidays or something like that. Get past the spending. I think the one thing that Thomas Massie said, and this, it looked like this was after, it didn't seem that Scalise was going to make it, because I think there were some people who were worried about how Scalise was going to go for omnibus. Not go, but what is your plan to kind of thwart more omnibus spending? And Massie had indicated that Scalise hadn't had a beat yet to figure that out. And so that's why he's like, yeah, I can't. You know, and he apparently told him right up front. That's fine. I mean, because it's business of the country. It's show business of the country, not show friends. I get it. So that's the latest with all of the... They're going to go to a second round slap fight. I don't know how many rounds the slap fight has. And if it's not Jim Jordan, again, then we're back to square one because of Leroy Jenkins out of Florida. Representative Leroy Jenkins. Gates. I don't disagree with a lot of Gates' policy. I think he is more aligned with voting record style to a McCarthy than he is a Jim Jordan, for sure as all hell he is. And I think out of all the people in the House, he gets more earmarks than almost anybody. That's truth. And as a conservative, you know, you gotta oppose that. That's not how we do things. But he gets a lot of earmarks. That's one of the things that he doesn't really tell you. And clearly he doesn't have a strategy. That's been my big thing. Have a strategy. If he would have walked in there and said, here's the file of my motion to vacate, and then he would have had a plan where then he would have introduced somebody, they would have nominated somebody, somebody who could get the, and they had done the groundwork leading up to this, secretively even, I don't care, to get the necessary votes for the replacement. Wait, I wouldn't have anything to complain about, would I? No. But I do, because it makes us look unprepared, and then it steals all of the wind out of this, the narrative sail that is, well, look at the Democrats. Democrats can't even bring themselves to control the anti-Semites in their party. You got the squad out there. They can't even control that. That's a huge story, I think. But it, all this, we just allow it. You can't sit here and talk about being a great strategist when you play into the media's hands every damn time. Stop. So we wouldn't have anything to complain about without all that. Now, speaking of, a couple other things to get into, Democrats. Kane, I don't know if you saw this. I sent this out, email newsletter. So in our hometown of St. Louis, they were having some difficulty. St. Louis aldermen could not agree on the Israeli-Hamas conflict. And I've told people before that my hometown, our hometown, is it's a super left city, very left city. They had three attempts to pass a resolution on the attack on Israel, and it fell short on Friday at the Board of Aldermen meeting. They had the guy out of St. Louis Hills who wanted to condemn Hamas militants, and then they had someone else who said, no, we got to stand in solidarity with Gazans, and oh, Israel's so mean. Nobody had the resolution to pass the votes. Nobody. So they could introduce these resolutions again this week. You are worthless and pointless if you can't even do that bare minimum. What a joke. What a for real joke. Stop. So goofy. But that's, the alderman there. There you go. Now, in the meantime, all these billionaires, today in good news, that have pumped millions and millions of dollars into all these Ivy League schools are now backing out. I'll give it to John Huntsman. Did you see what he did? John Huntsman, who is he's a big supporter of University of Pennsylvania, apparently, was like, we're not doing this. He and his wife, they announced that they're not going to donate any more money to that university. They're pulling out their support, University of Pennsylvania. They and Harvard apparently have been the hardest hit. You had billionaire Ken Griffin, who criticized, and apparently he had pledged $300 million to Harvard just this year. And now there's been another billionaire, he and his wife, that pulled all their funding and support. I think it's good. I mean, and good on Huntsman to do this. I haven't always agreed with him on everything, but this is, I mean, he didn't miss a beat. He said, absolutely, he says that it appears that Penn has become deeply adrift. And he said that we're rebuking this. He says, consequently, the Huntsman Foundation will close its checkbook on all future giving to Penn. He goes, that's been something that's been a source of enormous pride now for three generations of graduates. My siblings all join me in this rebuke. You're looking at $500 million that these universities are losing. Now, consider all these universities have had multi-billion dollars in endowments. That's why we were all like, you guys don't need bailouts. What are you talking about? That's good. It should hurt because our universities have become garbage, especially these old ones. They've become absolute garbage. And they quite frankly, I think, yes, stop supporting them. I hope that they redirect their funding to like the Hillsdales and you know, good universities that don't tolerate this. There's a lot of good Christian universities out there. There's a lot of other classical liberal universities out there I hope they redirect their funding and reconsider and consider supporting some of these other institutions.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
All right. And here we are again. Stop getting in these damn hamster wheels, people, and thinking you're going to run out in the open ocean. Here we are again. This dude has done this once. in 2014, once in 2016, and once in 2021. Now he has done it again. Now he's got criminal charges. He tried to, Ray Bellucci, tried to run to London in a giant hamster wheel across the ocean. The problem? The ocean. And so now he is in trouble. And he's ignored all the requirements previous that they've told him. So now he faces criminal charges. I don't know how many times you're going to do this. Just stop. A Florida man broke into a woman's house, and according to Fox 35 Orlando, and sat on her couch and made an unusual request. 39-year-old Daryl Davidson. And he was yelling and belligerent outside this lady's home. He tried to kick down the front door. He's denied entry. He did not try to commit further crimes while inside, but he did ask for water and something to smoke. He said he kicked in her door because he was trying to warn her that she was in danger from him. I don't know. Davidson remains held at the Marion County Jail on a $1,000 bond. These people. Oh, my goodness. I don't know how people do this. Marion County. Idaha Lee, 23, faces charges of grand theft and fleeing law enforcement in Marion County, Florida, because she finally is charged. So this is a development of the story. She had tried to steal an actual legitimate street sweeper and thought she was going to outrun the police in a street sweeper. Kane, what do you think the maximum?
Top speed?
Yeah, what's the top speed?
I'd say 7.
A full 7?
Maybe 7.
7 miles an hour.
If you're going downhill.
Okay, if you're going downhill. So clearly, obviously, she was taken into custody. There's a lot of fun footage of that. And she told deputies she didn't want to talk. And that she did tell deputies over and over again, though, you got me, you got me. And she faces charges of grand theft, displaying a weapon during her commission of a felony, and fleeing from law enforcement. She's held on a bond of $9,000. There you go. And also, a Florida man broke into a Clearwater home, stole a toolbox and a wedding dress. That's a WTVT. Ronald Harshorn, he broke into an 84-year-old's house while he was helping with pest control, returned to steal the items. He took about $800 worth of merchandise. He said, oh, I did take those, but I didn't take the wedding dress, though. That's okay, because they knew he did anyway, and he was still charged for it. So he's being charged for those crimes. A Florida woman was arrested because she wrapped her car. You can't do this, by the way. She wrapped her car to look like a Florida state trooper. She had her Dodge Charger all wrapped up to look like a state trooper. And you can't do that. They really don't like that when you're a civilian and you're impersonating the law, you know, the police. You can't be doing that. Apparently, two Florida Highway Patrol officers reported seeing this Charger traveling the opposite direction one day. It was painted the same thing as the Florida Trooper cars, had the light bar, but they noticed the decals were wrong. The FSO guard had a badge that looked like the badge was all wrong on it, so they ended up pulling her over, and that's what ended up happening. It was a 28-year-old Ulia Pugachev, and she got in trouble for that. She has to appear in court, according to the Herald. Yeah, you can't wrap your car like that. I mean, good grief. Stick with us. We got more in store. Third hour on the way.
Just a part of the question on the issues of refugees coming to Jordan. And I think I can quite strongly speak on behalf not only of Jordan as a nation, but of our friends in Egypt. That is a red line. Because I think that is the plan by certain of the usual suspects to try and create de facto issues on the ground. No refugees in Jordan, no refugees in Egypt.
There you go. But, you know, if you don't take them in the United States, you're a bad person or something. I mean, that's what we've been hearing from some of these individuals. Welcome back to the show. Dana Lash here with you. Top of this third hour. A lot of stuff we're following today. You can listen coast to coast. You can stream the radio program. You can watch the simulcast YouTube, Facebook channel 347 DirecTV. Later on today at 3 p.m. Eastern and 10 p.m. Eastern, if you're watching on the first, the simulcast, you will be able to catch my exclusive sit-down interview with Florida First Lady Casey DeSantis. And you chapter and verse newsletter subscribers, you get early access beginning at 7 p.m. Eastern. to the 24 Access for Digital. So that's going to be for you. I'm going to send that out in a separate email. You'll be able to see that shortly. And you can see, you've seen some of the previews of that discussion out there already. So the few things. Whether or not there is any kind of land invasion, that's still, I think it's on the table and remains to be seen. And there's been a lot of discussion about if there is the Gazan situation, what happens with people who are displaced because of Hamas. And I think that you, I've said before, we live in absolutely clarifying times. And clarifying times recall for clear answers. And I talked a little bit earlier about how there was a very different answer. Nikki Haley took two different attempts to say what she should have said and ended up, I think, kind of, she ended up fumbling on the whole refugee, Gazan refugee situation. Now, here's the difference between Israel and Hamas, which is the ruling terrorist entity that controls Gazan, the Gaza Strip. Hamas doesn't believe that Israel has a right to exist. That's it. If Hamas stopped bombing Israel, Israel would have nothing to react to. It's quite simple. I read a story. Do you know how many miles of tunnels that they have below Gaza going into Israel? Like 300 something miles. Now you can see why it is so dangerous if they are going in to Gaza. I've said this before. This is not like Stalingrad. This is Fallujah. I've heard people say, oh, this is a lot like... No. No, don't even compare. This is not like Stalingrad. This is Fallujah. There's also the issue of will. The northern part of Gaza is pretty densely populated, and they've been telling everyone that's why they turned water on in the southern part so that they could get people to leave. Hamas has been preventing people from leaving. They use their people as human shields. They want to act as though the people that they have trapped in harm's way, the area where Israel's been warning people for a week now to flee, they want to act like, oh, this is collateral damage from what Israel did. But where will Gazans go? Because no one will take them. You are importing terrorism into your own sovereign nation by bringing in Gazan refugees. Don't say that that's mean or that that's not true, because it's happened every single time. Kuwait, Lebanon, Egypt, Jordan, Israel. Every single time it has happened. So don't say that that has no basis in reality. Don't say that it's mean-spirited to point out obvious historical fact. DeSantis came out very strong. We played that audio earlier. Haley flubbed it twice. She tried to, Face the Nation. She was on with CNN, Jake Tapper. She said, there's so many people who want to be free from this terrorist rule. They want to be free from all of that. And America always has been sympathetic to the fact you can't separate civilians from terrorists. That's what we'd have to do. DeSantis said she's trying to be politically correct. She's trying to please the media and the left. And it's true. He had said previously before, he said, look, you can't do this. He said, you cannot do this. Audio soundbite 12. This is him responding to her last remark. Listen.
My position is very clear. As the first presidential candidate to say, no Gaza refugees, period. We're just not going to do it. And why? Because we don't want to import the pathologies from the Gaza Strip and other places in the Middle East to the United States of America.
He's right. I mean, he is exactly 100% correct with this. There's a major difference. And her campaign, they're trying to wrap themselves in a veneer of her UN ambassadorship as a way to deflect criticism. Like, you, I know better. I was UN ambassador. You can't criticize me. That inoculates me from any kind of criticism that I might receive. That's not really how that works. You, that's not really how that goes. She had two different opportunities to get that answer right, and she flubbed them. Finally, the third time, she came out. Now, she performed very well for America when she was at the UN, an entity that should not exist, but it does. She led very, she was a very strong leader in UN for American interests, which is why it's shocking to so many people that she flubbed this answer twice. Now, I was very generous in the beginning. I said, look, Jake Tapper, took him a minute and 30 something seconds to ask this damn question. He was playing off of what DeSantis said. It was an inarticulately clumsy question. However, she shouldn't, come on, you know better than this. It took them 2 days to try to reset. That's when you're explaining, you're losing. And you just allow your opposition to be even to double down on their strength. You can't hesitate on this stuff. And I'm going to tell you, because I've been very clear in the primary without hesitation. I will always tell you, I'll make a decision and I stick to it. And I always tell you where I come down. I cannot tell you how many other commentators out there think you're stupid and that they're going to just go along and you're not, they're going to be too smart for you to find out who they like and who they don't like. Come on. For crying out loud. You're not going to fool the people who built the country into thinking that you don't like who you like. I like people who are decisive. And I liked it that the Florida governor just came right out and was like, yep, they can't come in here. No one else was on that square. Nobody else had that position. Nobody. Not even the former president. You can get mad at me for saying it, but not even him. In fact, DeSantis had been for this since he was in the House. He has been against this stuff since he was in the House of Representatives. He had a resolution that he had crafted when he was in the House. I remember that. I was on air and I talked about it. I like decisiveness. There's one thing to talk a big game. There's one thing to go, you know what? Boom. Let the hammer fall because this is the choice. This is the decision. So he was correct. He was correct. And with this, he's getting a lot of heat from the media. The media is, and Biden are trying to work on people. You cannot cave to that. Which I know you won't. I wanted to bring something else up to you. This is creepy. Have you guys seen the Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning? It's the latest Mission Impossible one. And it's however many years later, and it's the IMF crew, and they have to... There's a new weapon. They call it the Entity. And the entirety of humanity is threatened. It is a sentient AI. And it is actually one of the most terrifying concepts for a film I've ever seen. I mean, if you're looking, it's spooky season. So if you want to watch a horror film, I think that the latest Mission Impossible is a horror film because of that. You have all of these people who are being, without realizing it, they weren't baited. They're in a war. They are merely parts in a story that a malicious sentient AI is writing. And they're on the cusp. I mean, you're constantly on the cusp of kicking off conflict, and you have to wonder what in the world. I was thinking about this when I read this story of AI that interpreted language on this relic that was found. People are using AI to translate language on these ancient relics and things that they find and all of this other stuff. There was a AI bot that's translating dead ancient languages into English. At some point, AI is going to be determining military strategy. If we're not there already. Now, what happens when AI determines that this strategy is the right strategy, but you can't let the people that be aware of what the strategy is, when keeping people in the dark is part of the strategy? Now you're starting to get into this theme of this film. Came out in July. I watched it over the weekend and I thought, oh my gosh. Think about it though. That's where we are. And you know what makes it easy to embrace this? Political tribalism. Makes it super easy to embrace it. I was watching this and it's a two-parter, so it ends, it's a cliffhanger ending. I don't know when the second one's supposed to come out, but this one just came out in July, but it's quite good. But that, it was a very original concept for a plot, and more so than iRobot, more so than anything that they've done with AI. It's very clever. Terrifying, though. Absolutely terrifying. But think about it. I mean, you know, you may have, who knows? Who knows? Hell, at this point, I'm surprised they don't use AI to solve the speaker problem. Jim Jordan, 20 votes against him on the first ballot. Second round now. And the world burns.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So apparently, there were reports of a hospital explosion on the outskirts of Surat. Multiple rockets, they were saying, were being fired, etc. And there were reports that, oh, there was a Baptist hospital casualty event in Gaza City. Well, apparently it was discovered to be the result of a misfired rocket launch by Hamas. Because Hamas launches their rockets out of civilian areas so that they can say that when civilians become casualties because the IDF responds, then they can claim that the IDF is killing people when it's Hamas putting everyone in danger. 30 to 40% of Hamas's rockets misfire and they land short in the Gaza Strip. There was no IDF air activity reported at the time by multiple international media outlets. And the timing coincided precisely with a salvo of rockets that were launched at Israel. So it was Hamas that literally carried out a casualty event at a hospital in Gaza City because they're animalistic moron terrorists. The end. Good heavens. Just horrifying. Also, since we are here at our quick 5 segment at the bottom of this hour, returns home after a grizzly bear bit off his lower jaw. This is crazy. He's a Montana man. He returned home after 5 weeks in a Utah hospital. Rudy Norlander. Man, what a name for a Montana dude. He literally had his jaw bitten off by a bear. Can you imagine having your jaw bit off by a bear and you live? Norlander didn't take questions because he wants to write the story himself. He wants to write a book. But he answered some of these questions at the University of Utah. He had to write on a whiteboard. He said he's looking forward to having a root beer float, reuniting with his Yorkshire Terrier, Sully, going outdoors, and maybe being able to attend the rivalry football game next month between the Grizzlies and the Montana State Bobcats. So, oof, my goodness. So his daughter jokingly said he's developed a whole new hatred towards the University of Montana because of the Grizzlies. Had his jaw bit off by a bear. By a bear? I just can't even imagine. A park opens on Staten Island's Fresh Kills. It's a former site of the world's largest landfill. Okay, well, good. It's Fresh Kills Park. I don't know what I think about that name.
Yeah.
Fresh Kills. Let's go to the park. Fresh Kills? Mm-hmm. Tasty. I don't know how I think about that. Let's see. The San Francisco mayor has asked to stop ticketing victims of car thefts. I don't know why they weren't doing this before. And Scottish insults. There's a whole list of them, and I really want to go down this whole list. 21 of the best insults that you would ever hear. Egypt is one of my favorites because of how it's spelled. Stay with us.
Follow Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, because knowledge is your ultimate superpower.
As all of this kind of kicked off, you and several other of your colleagues released a statement calling on for a ceasefire in the region. But I wonder, what is Israel supposed to do about Hamas after they murdered, brutalized, abducted over 1,000 of their citizens? Are they supposed to just do nothing?
Well, you know, I think what's important to note about a ceasefire is that it's not one-sided. Hamas has been sending thousands of rockets into Israel as well. And what is important is for us to identify our goal in terms of what safety means, in terms of what defense means.
But and if I think I may, Congresswoman, I think the position from Israel's perspective is that there was already an attack.
Mm-hmm.
And Hamas already committed an attack. Mm-hmm. After that happened, do you really believe that they should not respond to that?
I think what is important in terms of response is Israel does have a right to self-defense. I think what we need to take a look at in this situation is if collective punishment qualifies as defense, if the blockade on water, food, electricity, if the dropping of white phosphorus, which is an indiscriminate weapon, qualifies. So I do believe that there's a discussion to be had here.
She's struggling with this either or. This goes on for 3 minutes. She doesn't really ever completely answer anything. Welcome back to the program, bottom of this third hour. Dana Lash here with you. And we're still watching the House race going into its second hour. And of course, we have the situation that's unfolding still in Israel, the attack on, I mean, it is, I thought that, I don't know, to the extent in which we start to see, I mean, Lindsey Graham would love to bomb everything. We started off the show with him. He loved that, but that's not the way to approach it. Not the way to approach it. The issue with this, Hamas isn't interested in giving up any hostages. And really, ultimately, you know, I said this in a piece yesterday, if all these people who get out there and they claim to care so much about life, all you have to do is demand that Hamas, with the same force that you're demanding Israel to escalate, because like it's like Israel escalated it. Good heavens. I mean, that's the thing that aggravates me about this whole discussion is that there you have people who refuse to acknowledge the proper order of events. They absolutely refuse to do it. Hamas apologists do not get to rewrite the chronology of all of this and the chronological order of events and exclude from the chronological order of events the actions of the terrorists that started it all so that they can portray Israel's response as being the aggressive, unprovoked act. They also don't have the standing for their performative concern theater when they wail and weep over loss of life while Hamas shelters in hospitals. I mean, I just told you the big hospital that was in Gaza City, that turned out to be Hamas that did that because so many of their rockets misfire. Like up to like 40% of it. It's kind of wild. Now, these people, they all ruin their credibility. They by ignoring Hamas's atrocities while demanding that Israel stop defending its citizens. You don't get to call for de-escalation while Hamas still has hostages. You don't get to call for de-escalation right at the same time that Hamas is releasing video of hostages. You don't get to call for de-escalation when more and more video is released showing these terrorists running through this kibbutz and that kibbutz and shooting up anybody who poked their head out the doors to see what the commotion was all about. You don't get to call for de-escalation with that. There was not a war before Hamas launched rockets. There was not a war before they launched rifle-wielding, hang-gliding terrorists into Israel. There was not a war before Hamas busted into one kibbutz after the other and began executing families while live streaming it all. There was not a war until Hamas terrorists took the phones of people that they had captured and then uploaded, or if they didn't live stream their execution of that loved one to their Facebook, to their TikTok, to their Instagram, or even Twitter. Ruling parties of these disputed territories have multiple times been offered a peaceful solution. And at every turn, they have rejected it. At every ceasefire, their ceasefire agreement has always been broken by Hamas. So there wasn't a war before Hamas started this. And a response to someone else's provocation is not the aggressive action. Why did it, I mean, I saw, did you guys see the story? I had this yesterday. I sent this out to you last night. There was no condemnation of Hamas and their theft of UN aid that they used to support their terror campaign. Did you all see this? United Nations, they ended up trying to scrub their timeline, but it was too late and it was confirmed. They had people with trucks that said that they were from the Ministry of Health of authorities in Gaza. They stole fuel and medical equipment from the UN compound in Gaza City. They had to the UN staff had to evacuate headquarters in Gaza City, they had Hamas come in and they stole everything. Everything. Even some of the other aid stuff. They stole aid from the UN, and the UN is trying to cover it up. Ask me again why I think the UN is a worthless entity. They had the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Gazan refugees in Gaza, and it was robbed. They stole all their fuel, everything, and medical equipment. By the way, they found some of the medical equipment at some of the terror attack sites where they had Hamas terrorists go in and blow people up. If a Hamas terrorist was shot, they opened up their little medikit that literally said UN all over it. I mean, there's photos of it all over the damn internet. Oh, spare me the AI stuff. I see these morons that are recent converts to constitutionalism going out there saying that everything is AI. Actually, they only say one thing is AI, and then everything else they just very quietly, conveniently ignore. Now, Hamas puts its own people in danger. It steals everything. They literally put out a video. Hamas put out a video themselves. Did you know they have a channel? I didn't know that. They put out a video talking about how the EU funded all their water pipelines, and they were bragging about how they turned them into rockets and bombs. That is literally a video that Hamas recorded. The ruling authority of Gaza, that they recorded and they put out, where they're bragging about how they dig up all the area's water pipes to produce rockets. They recorded it, they produced it, and they put it out. Now, here's the crazy thing. This was put out several years ago, but it's only just now coming out. For all the people who are like, that's not true. Oh, it is. Why do you think the EU was having crisis meetings about, should we consider funding the terrorists that rule this area? Huh, I don't know. That's a tough one for us. They had footage in 2021 of them excavating pipes from the desert, and they were literally showing people how they made them into homemade rockets. It was Hamas's military wing, the Al-Qassam Brigades. I'm not playing the terrorist stuff, and I'm not going to show it. That's why I didn't send it. But they used them to make rockets. Remember how I told you yesterday? There were several of you who said I was shilling propaganda. Oh, is this propaganda? The video that's publicly available on this thing that rhymes with Schminternet? I mean, we've known that they've done this for a long time because they've done it with their damn sewage pipes a decade ago. Oh, my gosh. They had Amnesty International reports that came out. Why is the sewage going into the Mediterranean? Because Hamas dug up the sewage pipes. Why does no one have water? Because Hamas dug up the damn water pipes. Ask something else, stupid. Good grief. Do you know how many times the EU tried to deliver fresh water to these two territories? They went in with UNICEF, UN, between 2015 and 2022. They had all these different attempts to deliver fresh water. They transported desalinated seawater from one plant to the settlements of Khan Yunis and Rafah, that's southern Gaza, right by the border in Egypt, where 95% of the water was estimated to be unfit for human consumption. They had another thing that was going to deliver about 3 miles of pipelines as a part of a sewage treatment plant in Tubas, Tayasir, and Aqaba, south of Yenin, which is a known Hamas hotspot. And then they had another 16 miles of water pipelines that they had delivered. They increased all their pipeline aid, all of it. And they kept saying, no funding goes to Hamas. None of it goes to Hamas. And then, wow, look at all the rockets that Hamas is making with this newly acquired pipeline material. Wow, such shock. No one saw that coming. It was amazing. And you realize that they started digging into this, and it was the Telegraph actually began it, because they couldn't identify whenever they would have these mass bombardments of rockets in different parts of Israel. They were like, where the hell is this coming from? Like, they're broke. How do they have all this? Where the hell is this coming from? They started trying to verify the exact weaponry that Hamas was sending over. And that's when they started looking at it like, what the hell? These are literal building supplies. These are pipes. Well, who sent them pipes? I'll be damned, it's the EU. That's how they figure that out. Oh, but it's Israel's fault. Oh, it's all Israel's fault. Israel that unilaterally pulled out of the area in 2005, gave it over to them to entirely run by themselves. Don't blame Israel for all this nonsense. Hell, y'all ruled the damn area yourselves. It was Gaza. Y'all elected these damn terrorists in 2006. There was a Pew poll that showed that just a couple of years ago, they were enjoying favorability. Hamas. They have a martyrs fund where they dole out money like fat cats at a strip club if your dumbass terrorist kid goes out there and blows himself up. Golly. It's a wonder more atheists don't come from that religion than anything else, honestly. That's how that happened. So all the people who are like, oh, from the river to the sea. Here's our genocide chant. Chanting that and going along with it, there's only two that says two, one of two things about you. Maybe both. You're a terrorist supporter, an apologist for terrorism. Or you're a moron university brat who's still on mom and dad's collective teat. And you offer nothing to this country except you're a drag on social conversation, on any kind of public conversation. Because you're dumb. That's it. Probably both. So that's the truth of the whole matter. Where are we at? Where are we at in the House with the Leroy Jenkins party? Are we still going into the second round? Hey, guys, we ought to place bets. Let's see how long it takes the party of Leroy Jenkins to get everything together, get themselves a speaker.
Ready to grow your intellectual Rolodex? Download the Dana Show podcast and join the ranks of those who refuse to settle for the same old boring content on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
John, has the administration had any conversations with lawmakers about drafting an AUMF at this point?
I don't believe that's an active part of the conversation right now. And again, I think it's important for people to remember the additional military forces that are either being prepared or are on their way to the region is really about sending a signal of deterrence. We don't want to see this conflict escalate and widen. There are no plans or intentions to put U.S. boots on the ground in combat in Israel. Everything we're doing right now is about sending a strong signal of deterrence.
John Kirby, just about strong deterrence. Welcome back to the program. Later on today, and you probably have seen some of this out, for those of you who are subscribers to Chapter and Verse, the newsletter, you're going to get some exclusive access to this coming up. So tonight, well, actually later on today, 3 p.m. Eastern, 10 p.m. Eastern, only on The First TV, you get my exclusive sit-down with my one-on-one with Florida's First Lady, Casey DeSantis. Audio Soundbite 21, COVID is one of the things that we discussed. Check it out.
There were people that were going to lose everything. Businesses that generations had worked to be able to have, and it was the whole source of income for a lot of folks. I don't have the right to shut that down. All the while, the federal government was saying, hey, you corporations, you big box entities, you guys can stay open. Right. But you little guy, you know what, you have to shut down. And he saw all of that, and thank God he held the line. And you're right. So going back to what you're saying about the hits, yes, he got hit. They said some of the worst things you could possibly imagine about you are killing X, Y, and Z, you're doing terrible things. But that is what you want in a leader, because when the rubber meets the road and the lights are on and you have to make a decision in the moment that matters, do you pick yourself? Do you choose self-preservation? Or do you stand up and put yourself in front of a freight train because you want to stand up for the people who put you there in the first place? Exactly. And so when you see that firsthand, you will, if you knew what I knew about Ron DeSantis, you would be out there fighting the good fight too.
So you can watch that full discussion tonight, 3 p.m. Eastern, 10 p.m. Eastern, only on the first. And if you're a Chapter and Verse subscriber, you're going to get early access to it digitally as well. So make sure you look for that email. Kane, today in stupidity.
All right. It's Biden's HHS Secretary, Xavier Becerra. He says universal system of public health is needed, but that pesky constitution, though. Listen.
What we've learned through COVID and what we're going to see more vividly through climate change is that we cannot have a public health system that is a patchwork of good health and bad health. Mm. And unfortunately, because the Constitution left the authority for healthcare to the states, we have a patchwork.
Look at that. Yeah, there you go. Boy. Today in stupidity. All right. If you're watching the first, up next, my exclusive one-on-one with Florida First Lady, Casey DeSantis. And I will be back behind the radio mic with you tomorrow.